Now, ceremonies have taken place in Normandy to mark the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings. The Allied mission that changed the course of the Second World War, of course, and nearly 20 world leaders and heads of state, including the Queen and President Obama, and hundreds of veterans have attended the main commemoration as it happens on Sword Beach, one of the five landing sites. Here's a selection of news reports back in the day.
D-Day has come. Early this morning, the Allies began the assault on the northwestern face of Hitler's European fortress. The first official news came just after 9:30, when Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force issued communique number one.
The paratroops are landing. They're landing all around me as I speak. They've come in from the sea, and they're fluttering down, and they're just about the best thing that we've seen for a good many hours. They're showering in. There's no other word for it.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you.
How amazing it is to think that from the very part of France to which they go, William I launched his assault for the Norman conquest of England in 1066, the one date in the history books most of us remember. Maybe in another 878 years, 1944 will be remembered equally well by this strange reversal of events when, from England, came the conquest of German-occupied Normandy.
Can you imagine? Well, 89-year-old Arthur Beales, originally from England but has lived in Derry now for 70 years, was part of that mission. Arthur, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
I wonder, when you hear that, what comes to mind? What do you think about?
When I hear about the war, it always comes back a very lot of bad memories of people I've seen or I know got killed even before I went in the Navy, you know. And when I was in the Navy, you don't really realise what danger you're in till it's all over. The trouble of that day, you sit down and think. During the trouble, your mind goes blank. You just carry out orders, loading your gun and running here and running there.
What were your orders on the day?
On the day we left Portsmouth, we was told we were going to join up with a convoy to go on a mission. And they wouldn't tell us till we was about 5 miles out from the coast. And they told we'd be going to join up with a convoy of tank landing craft on a mission to Normandy coast. And they didn't tell us what kind of part of the coast we was going to. But the part about it, when we arrived at the destination, we was lucky enough between the two, Omaha Beach and Sword Beach, because we was escorting Americans as well and Canadians.
So were you landing on sand or on the rocky?
No, I was on the boat. We couldn't go right in.
Yes.
We happened to see the landing craft going in.
So you looked over the side of a ship and saw the scenes that we think about these days in Saving Private Ryan.
We see the boats landing, the platform going down, and the soldiers running through the water and onto the beach, and you see them getting mowed down. And the worst part about it, the Americans was just lost terrible lot of thousands of troops.
Omaha was particularly brutal.
It was the worst of the lot, you know.
And you witnessed that?
I witnessed all that. I witnessed all the dead bodies floating in the water. And our job was other small boats come out and picked them up and took them to different ships to take their dead bodies and wounded back to Portsmouth again. And that was mostly our job till we finished up there, you know. About 3 or 4 days, we backed them forwards.
So you, for 4 days, you were picking bodies out of the water?
Yeah, out of the water, and taking them downstairs, down below to get them tied up or cleaned up, you know, if they were wounded. If they were dead, just put them aside till they went down back to Portsmouth. And it was taken off the ship then.
What age were you?
I was about 19 and 8 months. That was the age of me then. Because my birthday was in September. I've been 20 in September coming that year. Like this year, like I am now, I'll be 90 on September this year.
Yeah. Had you mates in the landing craft?
No.
You were a different crowd?
No, they were different. I never even knew the British soldiers or the American soldiers. Yeah.
But you were on a boat. Did you feel helpless watching this?
I did. I did, in a way, because we couldn't fire no guns. We was too far out. Our guns weren't big enough.
How did that happen? Because the idea was that the bombardment should, quote, soften the Germans up and make the invasion easier for the troops and landing craft.
Uh-huh.
What went wrong there?
I don't really know what went wrong at all, but the way it was, they wouldn't really waiting for us, but they was told later on, the Germans, you know, they got word later on, they sent more troops down to the coast. But the real landing was done like before the D-Day with the paratroopers and night patrols sabotaging the coast and all that, you know. But the actual Normandy coast was very treacherous with concrete slabs sticking up out of the water. You had to be careful. That's why we couldn't go too far in.
Could the German guns reach you?
They could have reached us, yeah.
And did they have a pop?
They could reach us, but not the big ships.
Right.
Our big ships was, say, 15 miles back. They was firing their shells. Because when we passed them, we had to put in earplugs.
So how did they miss you?
We missed them because we was too far in.
Yes. In?
In the coast. Their shells was going over top of us, you know, missing us.
But isn't that remarkable? Because you just think they'd pull the gun down.
Yeah, but there was the big guns of our big ships was keeping them at bay, you know.
Ah.
They were more or less keeping it at bay. But that was our main job, was taking back the dead and the wounded, more or less.
You see, Arthur, you understand, for people of my generation, we only understand this through watching war movies.
Yeah.
Do you watch war movies?
Oh, yeah, I watch them. Yeah. I watch them every day of the week, you know. I like them, the war movies.
Did you see Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
That was more or less a bit far-fetched, you know, but
but
it was nearly really the same, you know, because we never went ashore. We wasn't ashore to see all that, you know, but all we see was the soldiers getting mowed down.
How do you reflect after the event, Arthur, knowing that you weren't one of those going ashore, that your role on the day was not to fight alongside them? Mm-hmm. Did that play in your mind?
It did a bit, you know. In a way, you'd like to have got hand to hand, what I say, your hand, like, go over the shore with a gun. But on the other hand, when you think of it, why go and get killed? Because the way we see them, they're getting mowed down all the time.
I can't help thinking of that one scene where the front of the craft goes down.
Hmm.
And every man in the landing craft is mowed down almost like dominoes.
Before they hit the water, some of them.
That happened, of course.
Yeah, before they hit the water, the whole lot was mowed down.
You saw that?
All that, all the time. And the water was red in no time. It just come out to where we was kind of circling around all the time. He couldn't stop, you know. He wouldn't let us stop at sea because he'd be a sitting target. We had to keep circling around, backwards and forwards, and small boats was bringing out the wounded and the dead for different ships to take ashore.
You see, the way I read the history was that this was meant to be just not a walk in the park, Arthur, but as I say, that the big guns were meant to loosen the defences. Mm. The Allies were just meant to go on the beaches, you know, regimentally, and get inland and start the business.
Yeah.
It must have seemed to you that this war was lost before it was even starting.
Oh, it did, in a way. It did, in a way, when we see all the troops getting killed and the hundreds of ships was around, and there was no attempt to go ashore, really, you know. He was more or less sitting there like a sitting target. And we just thought it was just useless. So we just thought different things about it.
I can't believe you experienced that at 19. 19, I was kicking football. And
that's right.
On the discus.
Well, that was the only, like, I went for the Blitz of London between 16 and 18. I see more dead bodies then in London, in the streets.
You witnessed the Blitz?
Blitz, as in the Blitz of London.
Do you remember the jitterbugs, the jets coming in from...
the doodlebugs.
The doodlebugs?
Yeah, I remember them coming over. And they used to come over. And when you see them coming, you was all right. But if they stopped over the top of you, you're okay. They would go further, they'd drop further on. Mm. But see when it's coming over, if they stopped, you just run like hell because they would come down to water.
These were massive bombs that were jet-propelled and randomly rained on the City of London and other places.
There were ones called the V1.
V1s. And then the V2s, but then they were got in time.
You know, like, you never see the V2s, you know. It was that fast.
Arthur, I'm so struck today. It's not that I don't know that people are alive, but I'm just so struck, and I'm sure listeners are today, that I'm speaking to a living eyewitness.
Mm. And I was an eyewitness, you know, of all that. As I said, I could write a book about...
But why haven't you?
That's what I can't get myself around to it, you know. See, my wife was always... She spent half her life in hospital, and I never got round to doing these things, you know, like... It never entered my mind, but a lot of people... I even had Olga Bradshaw from the Sentinel.
Yes.
She was up in my house and took a statement from me about when I joined the Navy and all that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she had two or three statements in the Sentinel about me.
So how was your war after D-Day?
My war after D-Day was... We knew the war was... Our job then was to travel down the coast when the army was going through France. We went and we finished up in Norway. And we were doing trips from Norway to Murmansk in Russia. I was in the Russian convoy then, you know.
You were protecting the...
They've got stars on there. I mean, Russian stars.
The badges,
The Arctic star, you know.
So that was a key supply... No, the Germans were using that part to get at Britain.
That's
on the northern
right,
part of the continent. And you were looking for them, or what were you doing?
Looking for them as well. And because they even sunk the Tirpitz, not the
Tirpitz.
The Tirpitz, in Tromso.
You were part of that?
No, I wasn't part of that, no, but I seen it.
It was the greatest ship.
It was there on its side when we went to the harbour, you know.
It was the greatest ship in history, wasn't it, at that time?
The size of the ship and decks was about 3 foot thick of steel. I thought they were never... It was unsinkable.
Arthur, I wonder at the time, had you the presence of mind to feel that this was remarkable? That people, when people talk about war, they say, look, at the end of the day, the Second World War was a justified war. There was a clean sense of, you know, that Hitler was doing terrible stuff.
Yeah.
And that this was a war that was a just war. I wonder how it makes you reflect on war since then, on Iraq, Afghanistan, issues like that.
Well, then wars, they shouldn't have... I mean, to me, they're just useless wars because they come to nothing. At the finish, they come to nothing.
But yet the war you fought in changed Europe.
We knew we was going to kind of win the war
because
they got more confident, and the news was great, you know, what we heard about the news and all that.
But I'm asking, do you feel that your war, the Second World War, was a good war, a just war?
It was in a way, because Hitler would have took over the world even easy. But what more or less saved us in a way was the Americans coming in. It was a good job they bombed Pearl Harbor. Otherwise, the Americans wouldn't have been in the war. But when the Americans see how close Hitler was when he was in France, he could have come over easy. We couldn't have stopped him because he's only the Home Guard. And they were useless, you know.
Mm.
And that's why...
Dad's army.
And that's why the Americans think, because they was thinking if they'd ever come in to help us, they would have come into England, into Ireland. The next stop was across the Atlantic.
Well, there were plans, we know, at Craigavon Bridge. Once they got there, what people would do, it would be, you know, like almost like the Bridge Too Far movie.
That's
you know, what
right.
would happen in Derry if the Germans got to Derry? I mean, and Berry, of course, suffered partially. Messines Park and the like was bombed. Goodness, I'm still rather struck, you know, that I'm talking to a man who witnessed
I've seen it all, you know. I've seen it all. And that's like a lot of people... We like to talk for hours sometimes, talking, you know, when I get talking about the war. And even like I say at night times now when the wife's away now, she passed away last March.
That's right.
My wife.
Yes.
And I have more time in the house to think, especially at night times. All these things come back in my mind.
Yes.
But what could have happened to me, you know? That's what I think of sometimes.
And do you be troubled?
Yeah, it worries me many
a
time. It worries me. Matter of fact, I was down in a hospital for nearly 5 or 6 weeks, down not Granger, but Waterside Hospital, because I was going out my mind sometimes, you know.
Come. I think it's perfectly understandable.
I kind of got cured it now. I cured myself.
Good work.
Over it. It worked all right, you know.
Everybody wants to know, how did you end up in Craigan?
Well, I said, America, there we go, see?
Where did you catch your eye?
I met her in the Criterion Ballroom.
In the Crit?
The Crit. And she kind of took me straight away. I took to her straight away myself.
But why, how did you end up in Derry? How did you end up on the Crit?
Well, we was in Derry, see, on a ship.
Yes.
A ship, HMS Torrington, that was her name, you know. We tied up alongside where Sainsbury's is. Now we're Sainsbury's. And we let her go ashore then, see. Well, I went ashore this particular night, me and the mates, we finished up in the Crit. And this girl come dancing past, you know, with another girl. And it was like, it was a future wife, you know. And I said, you call that dancing? She was trying to jitterbugging, you know. You call that dancing? She said, can you do it better than me, you know? So the next dance, I went out and asked her for a dance. And me and her hit it off like that.
What was the tune? Do you remember inside,
A week, after a week. This is true as I sit here. I asked her to marry me after a week.
What was her name?
Betty Quigley.
Betty Quigley.
Yeah, Betty Quigley. That was her name. She's come from off of Bishop Street, you know. And I should see her home from the Crit. When you think of it then, you could walk the streets at night time and you wouldn't get touched. She lived in Ferguson Street, off of Bishop Street. And I should see her home every night, but I couldn't get near the front door. Yeah.
Had she brothers?
No, she had just sisters.
All right.
And I used to walk from there then at 12 o'clock at night to where Sainsbury's, down the Strand. Mm. And there'd be the Yanks and Canadians and all different sailors down Vicer Street in the Strand, all fighting and carrying on. But I never interfered with anybody. You know, I was by myself.
Oh, were you a gentleman? Did you leave her at the front door?
No, I couldn't get to the front door. I couldn't get near it.
Right.
I ran the next street.
And who was the better dancer, you or Betty?
She was.
Oh, Betty was.
She kind of taught me more, you know.
And what was the music? What was the music?
I was in the mood and all that in the mood, you know. She did a box and all that. And she kind of taught me more because the Yanks was in there at the time. And she had to go with the Yanks and all that, you know.
Did you like the Yanks?
No.
Because nobody seems to like the Yanks.
Didn't like them at all.
They were just too clever for their own good,
well,
weren't they?
I was in America for a while, in New York and Boston. That's where we picked up our ship. It was an American boat we picked up, a destroyer, and brought back from America.
So did they get better money than you?
Yeah. They got more money. They got more money even when they're there. But that's where they got the girls and went to see the money, attracted them. And the Derry men didn't like them at all.
Well, I'd have thought so. There was an invasion, a D-Day of a different day when you boys arrived and took all the girls.
Used to be like, the main pub then was Tracy's Bar, bottom of William Street.
Yes.
Matter of fact, that was in a film one time, you
still
know.
Still there, Tracy's Bar.
No, it's still there, you know. But, I took the Derry very well, because I find, not because you're Derry people, I find the Derry people very nice to talk to.
But Arthur, why was the decision? Because at that time, the Derry woman who gets the soldier can look forward to a life in America, a life in London.
Yeah.
Why did you do it the other way and stay?
Well, the way it was, she said to me, like, if I get any homesick, would you let me come home? Well, I promised all that, you know.
Yeah.
And I more or less kept my promise when she was expecting the first youngster and she wanted back home. And I said, OK, I'll take you back home. And we come back here and we lived for a while, you know.
Was she close with her mummy?
Yeah.
Right.
Lived in a room in a house where she was born, you know.
Yes.
But eventually when the first boy was born, matter of fact, we had two boys first in the house where she was born in. Mm-hmm. But then we applied for a house and got one in Craigan. I had two boys out there then.
So you could tell us all about Craigan before the Troubles, when Craigan was a flourishing place that didn't have to worry about what became and happened in the late 60s.
There's no trouble then in Craigan. You see, when trouble broke out in Derry, I had to watch myself like that the last time, you know. Mm. I only had to watch myself many a time going out the shops in Derry. But when I opened my mouth and started to speak, they knew I wasn't from Derry.
And you were services, of course.
Eh?
You were services.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now I'm like that long in Derry, Derry people know me that well. Even down the street where I live in, I'm about the oldest one in the street. in the Rathlin Drive. That's where I live, you know.
Arthur, stay with us. I'm loving every minute of your company today, but just let's bring in my colleague here, because at a memorial ceremony in Bayeux Cathedral today in France, the congregation's also been paying tribute to the German soldiers, quote, swept up in this tragedy and the many victims of war. And Jenny, of course, people who listen to Radio 5 will know that our reporter Jenny Witt, who's originally from Hamburg, is here. Jenny, I think you're as struck by this man as I am.
Massively. I'm really moved sitting here, and I'm feeling very honoured and very privileged to sit next to you, because, as you said, you know, you're one of the people who changed history, and all your comrades did, and I'm, you know, in the same way that my family did, and all these very normal people from right across the continent and right across Britain and Ireland did, you know. But it's just astonishing listening to you, you know.
Well, I'm not really worried about that part of it myself. I just treat myself, I'm nobody. Yeah, I'm just a human being. And the people, I just take people as I find them, which I think anybody should do that, you know.
Jenny,
like, if you didn't like me, that's all right. I wouldn't worry about that.
No risk of that.
I think she likes you, Arthur. Jenny, tell us about growing up and your experience of commemoration, because for the modern Germany, of course, this has been delicate and it's been problematic and difficult for your generation. I'm assuming once you leave Germany and go to countries like England or Ireland or whatever. Tell me about your understanding of commemoration from a German perspective.
It's so different, you know, and I was just trawling the front pages of the newspapers online and trying to find details of events in Germany, and there aren't, you know. It's all eyes on Normandy, as should be, as it should be. But Angela Merkel, the Chancellor, is in Normandy, and she's met Vladimir Putin. But the way they're treating it, you have to bear in mind that there is this blanket of guilt still lying across the German nation, you know, for two world wars and in particular the second.
It's not the modern Germany now. It's the old Germany. Because if you go to Germany now, or Berlin or Hamburg, you can't say anything about the swastika. They wouldn't let you.
Absolutely. It's illegal. You can't. Yeah, there are certain displays which are simply illegal. I mean, people have dealt with it in a way. Yeah, but I know my father, for example, he was born in 1939, and his father was a German army doctor. Yeah. He was a medic. Mm. So he was killed in Russia. Mm-hmm. And we never spoke about it. My grandfather was a civil servant at the time of the war. Mm. He never spoke about it. Hamburg was firebombed. You know, in one night, 40,000 people were killed. Mm. 40,000 people, that's half of Derry. And that was never mentioned. And I think we probably grew up, my generation grew up in a sort of a state of ignorance because it was still too raw, you know. Many, like many veterans, you're sort of unusual because you can talk about it, I think. But especially on the German side. And even Chris Scholes, who's American, who was in this morning doing the newspaper review.
Local principal, yeah.
Exactly. He was saying his father-in-law never spoke about it. Nah. And, you know, so I think we were quite sheltered, but we had this vague, fluffy feeling of, you know, we've done something horrendous. We're pariahs internationally. You have to explain a lot. And you know, people sort of expect you to have this sense of national guilt, which is right in one way, but it's wrong in another, because our generation didn't actually have anything to do with it. But we need to understand, and we need to draw the lessons from it.
Jenny, help us understand that, because at its most simplistic level, here you have this guy who rises in Germany and becomes very, very popular among the masses, and he's got great mass appeal and all the rest. But suddenly he wants everywhere else. From your education and from your family experience, do you understand that? You know, I want France, I want Belgium, I want Russia, I want Britain.
I would never claim to understand Hitler as such, but I do understand to some extent what happened in Germany after the First World War, because when people came home from the front, they came home to a country that was in tatters economically. There was no welfare, there were no jobs. There was an attempt at revolution in Germany, which was quashed. And there was a huge sense of frustration and anger and poverty. And when this guy comes along and says, look, I've got the solution, those guys are the bad boys, it's the Jews. You know, I think people did latch onto that very easily. And it's not unique, because you look at what happened in Japan. A former colleague of ours here, Michael Bradley, just wrote an article about Japanese soldiers who, when the Americans came, the Japanese soldiers were told to kill members of their own families because the Americans were there. Now, it's a strange logic, but they did it. And I think really terrible things can happen to people in desperate situations. And I think Germany was a very desperate country. You know, we had mass inflation. My granny was born in 1909. She remembered people going to the bakery with wheelbarrows of money because you had to pay 2 million Deutschmarks for a loaf of bread, you know. And it was hyperinflation, you know, prices increasing by 5,000% a day. There was just chaos. And I think when one guy comes along and says, I've got the solution, people will probably in that situation latch onto it.
And what's life been like for you, Jenny? Because can I say this without... I don't want to embarrass you in any way. You're a great crack, right? And the whole thing about the Germans, you know, being stiff and disciplined, we're up and then we go to bed. And I mean, you turn that on its head, and I love that about you. But I wonder, is that a way of dealing with those stereotypes and having left Germany and being, you know, a German, you know, probably the only German in most of the circles in which you operate? Have you found it challenging?
No, you see, because we're not like that, you know. It's not like I'm putting something on. We are actually quite funny, I think, most of the time, and we're quite human. And I think people here watch too many war films with respect, because it's the war films that portray us as such, you know, that make us look like the gruff, you know, kind of type, you know, rough, horrendous people. And I think there's a stereotype, and I'm saying this very respectfully, but especially in Britain, there's a stereotype that persists to this day of the kraut. It's still there, and I think I'm quite conscious of it sometimes, especially when I meet people of your generation, Arthur, because it's, you know, obviously after your experiences, I could completely understand why you feel that way, but others shouldn't, and the media should have more sense. So I think sometimes I get a bit angry about that, you know, but I think it's hugely important to kind of build those bridges and to understand, you know. I'd love to have an exchange almost of somebody of your generation and a German person of your generation to meet up and say, what was it like for you? I mean, there's a story. My granny went for a bit of butter in Hamburg during the war. There was rationing. So the rationing stations were dotted around the city. And she had to walk far away. So the bombing happened. Bombing raid happens in the middle of all that. She's away getting butter. She was lost for 3 days because all her points of reference had been wiped out. There were no buildings left.
Nah.
There were no streets left. There were no parks left. So she was literally wandering around the city trying to find her way back home, which she did after 3 days, you know. But it's just that experience. And we were fairly unscathed by the war. We didn't lose too many members of our family. But I know we had a social democratic branch of the family, you know. They were in concentration camps for short periods of time. Very harmless in comparison to what the Jews went through.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was there. And I just think it's so crucial that these experiences are recorded. And this is above my pay grade. But having Arthur here, I really think we should, you know, if you were willing, we should record as much as we can of your history and your experiences, you know, and that we should do the same with Germans, you know. And I'm working on a First World War project. Yeah, it's too late for that, but I'm acutely aware that.
But I know one thing: a German soldier is a very good soldier. Years ago, except for the riffraff, more or less, come along, you know.
Yes, yes.
He's a very important man during the war.
Yeah.
With
well, that's
soldier.
my last anecdote. My father, my paternal grandfather, who I mentioned, the doctor.
Yeah.
Again, my father never mentioned him. And maybe 5 years ago, we were sitting together one night, and he started showing me pictures of this very normal guy on a horse. He just joined the cavalry, and he just got his qualification as a doctor. But the next thing that came out was a little cloth bag, and my father opened the cloth bag, and out came the ceremonial dagger, which.
Yeah.
Members of the army were given. It had the swastika on it.
Mm.
Now, that was such a difficult thing for him to do, to take this dagger out and show it to me without glorifying it in any way, but to say, look, this is a bit of our family history, you know, warts and all, but that's what it was, you know.
Arthur, I wonder, goodness, I could talk to you for a late. I wish we were here till tea time. I think we've only started our conversation.
Yeah.
Can we speak again, maybe?
Oh, yeah, certainly, any time. I've got plenty of time now in my life now. You know? I've no wife now to tend to, you know.
But just finally, on the day that's in it, and it might be the last day that so many veterans go back to Normandy, your heart is with them, no doubt.
Oh, certainly.
I wonder, do you reflect on life just finally? Do you feel like you're a lucky man, like you're a blessed man?
Oh, I am, yeah. I'm blessed all over, all the time, because... Not only that, when I look at them people on the TV, them veterans, I say to myself, Christ almighty, did I look that old? You know, I got young feelings, younger heart all the time. And when I see them men on the veterans there, they call vet, and some's even younger than me, I say, Christ almighty, am I like that? And that makes me realise how lucky I am. Because people say to me, are you still driving your car? I said, oh, your age, you're still driving a car? I can't. It takes a lot. When it starts at night time and I think about it, I must be bloody old, you know, like that.
But isn't it amazing that 70 years on, you're still haunted by all that? Isn't that astonishing? 70 years, 7 decades on.
Listen,
who plays on me, you know?
Arthur, this is the first of our conversations, and right. Jenny and I both, I think, would like to talk to you again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've really enjoyed your company, sir.
Certainly.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me. And yeah, thanks very much, Jenny.
Jenny Whitter, alongside Arthur, and we're thinking about Betty, who he lost only last year as well. Just fascinating that Arthur Beales, originally from England, of course, would end up in Derry for the 70 years. That happens to us, you know. I was about to come here to be a youth worker for a year to keep my ma happy and earn a bit of money. And I'm still here. And I think this place does that to you. Wow. Normandy, 70th anniversary today.